It is 33 minutes now after 2 o'clock on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon, and I am surprised and delighted and also very nervous to be saying the following words. I am joined by telephone with Mr. Chris France from the TomTom Club. Hi, Chris.
Hello there.
It's so nice of you to take some time to talk to us. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, I'm always happy to speak to Humboldt County.
Have you've been out here before, I take it?
I have, yeah. It's been a while since I've actually been up in that part of California, but yes, I have been there.
Well, you have a lot of fans here, but there's probably very few places in the world where that saying isn't true. So it's a real pleasure
well,
to talk to you.
You.
I know there's a bunch of things I wanted to talk about, but maybe we could start by talking about your new EP, Downtown Rockers.
Okay.
I just played a cut of from it, Kissing Antonio, which I enjoyed very much. And
cool.
How did this record come about? It's been a while since you put something out.
Yeah, well, it came about. This time last year, we were on a tour of America with the Psychedelic Furs, and the band was sounding really good, and everything was going really well. And in our sound checks, we would do these little ad lib improvisations and jam sessions. And we decided that when the tour was over, the little jam sessions during the sound checks had been going so well that we should go into our studio, which we had just renovated at great expense, I might add. And we would go into the studio and improvise and see what we could come up with. So we did that. We spent a few days improvising with the band, and then we recorded all that. And then we edited it together into songs, and then Tina and also Victoria, who sings with Tina, put the vocals on, and we had some really good songs.
So it really just grew out of it sort of grew out of the tour, not like you sat down and said, okay, we're going to make another record. Who should we get? How should we do it? More organically.
It was very organic, actually, and we also knew that, you know, by doing a new record, we would hopefully rekindle some interest in the band. So it serves that purpose also. But you know, we love to record and we love to make music, write music, listen to music. So it's just like a natural thing for us.
You mentioned the studio that you had renovated at great expense. Is that the clubhouse? Is that the name?
Yeah. Yeah, we call it the clubhouse, yeah.
It must be, you know, I'm sure that you've had the ability to make recordings, you know, without going to a commercial studio for some time, but it must be just creatively, I would imagine, having the equipment and the ability to do that in such a comfortable setting that must be a preferable way to make a record.
Yeah, well, our studio is very beautiful, and it has, you know, large windows looking out over a nice stream and forest, green forest, and you know, you can see the seasons change. It's really pretty ideal, I think.
Yeah, sounds like a perfect environment for creativity to flourish. When are you planning on? Is there a tour that's going to happen behind this record?
Well. We're just doing a few select dates on the East Coast here. I hope that we'll have a proper tour in the spring, and hopefully we'll be up your way.
I hope so. At least you'll probably be if you play San Francisco and Portland on this upcoming tour, which you probably will. You'll be driving pretty close to our studio, so we'll wave at you at the very least when you go by.
Well, I would love to drop by and say hi.
That would be awesome. That would be beyond awesome. I want to ask you a couple questions about the old days. I'm particularly interested in Island Records, but I noticed that the current EP, Downtown Rockers, is released on the Nacional record label, which
yeah.
I associate with bands primarily out of Latin America, although maybe I'm getting that wrong. How did
no,
you end
no,
up on...
No, you're right. It's the premier label for Latin alternative music. And how we came to be involved was... about 15 years ago, before Nacional Records existed, a guy named Tomas Cookman called us up and he said, Chris and Tina, I was wondering if you'd be interested in producing a band I manage from Argentina called Los Fabulosos Cadillacs. And I said, well, that's very nice of you to ask, but I got to be honest, I've never heard of them. And he said, well, they're enormous in Latin America. They play stadiums. And it just so happens they're doing a show in Puerto Rico next weekend. Why don't we fly you down to see them? So I said, sure. And I flew down to Puerto Rico. I heard the band. They were fantastic. And they wanted to make a record at Compass Point Studios in Nassau, Bahamas, with Tina and I, you know, behind the board. So we said, okay, great, let's do it. And it was such they didn't really even need a producer. They were so fabulous and so well-rehearsed and professional. All we had to do really was say, oh, that's great. What's the next one, you know? So anyway, it was a delightful experience. And Tomas, their manager, was talking about how he wanted to found a label for Latin alternative music. And sure enough, he did, and he's had enormous success with it. So then I guess it was 2 summers ago, I got a phone call from him. He said, you know that live album that you guys did that never got a proper release, the Tom Tom Club album? I'd like to release it on my label. And we said, sure, great. And so he did a great job with that. It was called Genius of Live. And once it was 2 CDs, one CD of the Tom Tom Club Live, and another CD of remixes by a number of alternative Latin artists of Genius of Love. So it went very well, and we thought, well, these guys, their heart is in the right place, and also they work really hard. They really, it's like the old days of the record business with them. And so we've just been sticking with them, and very happy to be part of that family.
It is a really, I mean, we get a lot of records that come in every day, and the ones with the Nacional record label get a quick listen because they consistently put out extremely high quality and very interesting records.
Yeah, we've been doing some remixes for some of their artists, like Mexican Institute of Sound and the Pinkertones. And I just got a remix of Kissin' Antonio from one of their artists named DJ Latin Bitman.
Oh, sure.
He's from Santiago, Chile, and so it's a lot of fun to be hanging with them.
Yeah, for sure. I want to go back a little bit to the old days. You mentioned Compass Point, and that, of course, calls to mind the Compass Point All-Stars and Island Records and Chris Blackwell.
Sure.
And the thing that interests me about it is I remember Island Records from a long time ago, and that this was another label that was putting out consistently interesting things, and it seemed like records were made a little bit differently in those days, in part because you had people like Chris Blackwell who were so committed to the music and committed to the art as much as they were to the business end of it. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and talk about what Island Records and Chris Blackwell meant.
Well, our manager with Talking Heads and with Tom Tom Club up until a couple of years ago, when unfortunately he passed away, was a guy named Gary Kerfurst. Gary managed, he had started off very young in the music business with a band called Mountain, Leslie West and Felix Pappalardi. And anyway, Gary had established a relationship with Chris Blackwell by managing Peter Tosh and also Toots and the Maytals and the Mighty Diamonds, a number of reggae bands that were on the Island label. So when Chris Blackwell actually came to see a Talking Heads play at CBGB's, and he said, Robert Palmer, the singer Robert Palmer, brought him down to see us, and he said, you know, I can see that you guys have really something interesting going on, But I have to tell you, I'm just totally committed to breaking Bob Marley right now. This is 1976. I'm totally committed to breaking Bob Marley, and it wouldn't be fair to take on, you know, a band that I wasn't totally committed to. So he passed on Talking Heads, and I think he always kind of regretted that.
I'm sure.
But when he built Compass Point Studios, he called up Gary and he said, "Look, I got this new studio, brand new, and I'd love for Talking Heads to be the first band to record here," because, you know, we had kind of a pretty good buzz in the music magazines and stuff at the time. So it would be good business for him to have a band like ours down there. And we agreed, and we went down, and it was a wonderful experience. Eno was the producer. And we just kept going back to the studio. We went back again for Remain in Light. And then we went back for when Chris invited us. He was the guy who invited us to come down and do something with Tom Tom Club. Then we did one Tom Tom Club album there, and then we did another one there. And what else did we do? We did Ziggy Marley there. We produced Ziggy Marley, and we produced Los Fabulosos Cadillacs. So we were there a lot, and in fact, our older son was born down there when we were we just finished Speaking in Tongues, which was also recorded at largely at Compass Point. And we were practically living there, Tina and I, during the early 80s. And, actually, we were living there when we weren't on tour. And we got to be friends with Sly and Robbie and Robert Palmer and Joe Cocker and, you know, the Rolling Stones would come through, Iron Maiden. It was really diverse. I mean, James Brown, that's where I met James Brown.
Wow, that had just been a fascinating, you know, place to be, especially at that time.
It was really fantastic. It was like, you know, like kind of like the best kind of musical fantasy or dream that you could possibly have.
There, you know, there's, when I listen to those old Tom Tom Club records, and this was true even at the time, there was a subconscious or a not completely understood image that it brought up in my mind of you know, sort of the Caribbean and islands and palm trees and things like that. And I don't know whether that was, maybe I was just seeing it on Island Records and that was the thing. But do you think that being down there, and especially amongst the reggae artists, did that influence the sound of the Tom Tom Club at all?
Well, we were already in love with reggae production techniques like dub-wise productions, and the way they really emphasized the bass and the drums, of course, appealed to us. So yeah, we were strongly influenced by reggae music, and we never really tried to play reggae music because you know, When you're friends with Sly and Robbie, you don't want to really encroach on their thing.
Sure.
you don't want to like be the pale white imitation, you know. But we were definitely strongly influenced by what they did, and also you know, by the engineers we worked with. The first two Tom Tom Club albums were recorded and mixed by Stephen Stanley, who was, you know, in his early 20s and from Jamaica. And, you know, he's a great engineer. He's still working today in Jamaica. He only mixes now, though. He doesn't record the bands anymore. He doesn't want to deal with the musicians. He just wants, you send him the tapes or the files or whatever, and he'll mix it.
Is it true that the first Tom Tom record was scheduled to be produced by Lee Perry, but for whatever reason he just didn't show up, and so you decided, okay, well,
yeah,
we'll produce it ourselves?
That's true. In retrospect, I'm really glad he didn't show up, but at the time I was mortified because we had booked this. We met with Lee Perry in New York. He was coming through New York, and we had a meeting with him, and he said, yeah, man. And everything was all set. The fee was agreed upon and everything. And we booked the studio. We flew our gear down to the Bahamas. We were waiting and waiting and waiting. And after 3 days, he hadn't shown. We knew that, you know, it's customary for a certain type of Jamaican person to be late, right? We were aware of that. But after 3 days, we thought, oh, this is a little too late. So we started making calls, and nobody knew where he was, and nobody could find him. And then finally, we got a call after about 10 days. We got a call. Lee can do it, maybe, but he wants $1,000 an hour. And I said, well, it sounds like maybe he's trying to put the price a little too high. And they said, no, no, he can do the record in 8 hours. So that's when we knew we were dealing with like basically a nut. And so Stephen Stanley, the young Jamaican kid who was hungry to work, was just sitting there doing nothing at the studio in Nassau. And we said to Chris Black, well, how about we work with Stevie instead? And he said, great idea. And we did.
Wow. And it did turn out to be a great idea.
Yeah. Had it been real Lee Perry, who knows what would have happened.
Exactly. Well, I know you're busy, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I've got two more questions for you, if you have a moment.
Yeah, sure.
And this next one touches a little bit on your personal life. So if you'd rather not. I would understand.
I love
another
to
question.
Talk about my personal life.
I mean, one of the things that I've noticed, you know, over the years in being involved in music and knowing a lot of band people, is that the relationship amongst band members is a very unique type of relationship. I liken it to a marriage in a way, because there are such personal feelings involved, and feelings get hurt, and there are difficulties and tensions and so forth. You are married to a person with whom you have been in a band for a long, long time. So
yeah.
My question, I guess, is twofold. How does that change the relationship that you would have with someone who's your band member, and how does it change your relationship with someone who's your wife, that you're in a band together?
Well, all I can say about that is that it's been a great pleasure for me. To work with Tina all these years. I met her in 1972, and she finally, after knowing her for about a year, I tried to get her to join the band, which at the time was a band called the Artistics in Providence, Rhode Island. And she was reluctant, but finally, one day in 1975, when we were trying to get Talking Heads off the ground, she came into the loft, came home with a bass guitar, right? And I'll always be grateful to her for making that leap, even though it was at my behest. She didn't have to do it, you know? But she did. And as a result, Talking Heads was even more unique than it would have been without her, you know? Admittedly, it would have been good in any case, but with Tina involved, it became a whole nother thing. And if you listen to the bass parts in Talking Heads or Tom Tom Club, they're totally musical, and each one is completely different from the next. She never repeats herself. She always keeps it very interesting musically, and she's sexy too. So it's a complete win-win, and she has a really keen intelligence, and all this is very good for the music, and for my personal life, I mean, it's excellent.
Nice. Well, I could see the strain in a marriage that would be put on a marriage if one person was off touring the world, playing in a band. So to have your partner with you.
You know, anybody who's been married, we've been married 35 years, and we celebrated our anniversary this year in Paris, and it was really nice, you know. But anybody who's been married 35 years has had their ups and downs. Same with the music business. Anybody who's been making records for 35 or 40 or whatever, however many years, you know, you go through lots of twists and turns, and sometimes they're great and sometimes they're really not great. But we stick to our guns and we keep our promises, and, you know, here we are.
It's wonderful. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing for sure. The very last question I have for you is probably a pretty quick one, and it's admittedly self-serving. One of my favorite Tom Tom Club songs is "Devil Does Your Dog Bite," and the only place that I know you can find that is on a record that's not in print anymore, the soundtrack to Married to the Mob. Is that available anywhere else?
You know, I think it might be on some weird B-side or something like that. It might be on a B-side of... let's see. You know, I would have to check.
Okay.
My memory fails me at the moment. But yeah, that's a rarity.
I've been on a quest since... I heard that song on in L.A., on K-Rock in the earlier to mid-80s, and I've been on a quest ever since then to find it. I finally found a friend who had the Married to the Mob soundtrack on vinyl. So I just recorded it off of vinyl, and that's what I play it on now. So that's a
excellent.
That's an
excellent
song. Well, I'm going to play a song off the new EP right now, and I want to ask you if you would just stay on the line for a bit, and I want to talk to you off the air for just a second.
Okay, sure.
But thank you so very much for taking some time to talk to us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, hold on, and I'll be right with you.
Okay.
That's Chris France from Tom Tom Club. Their new record is called Downtown Rockers, and I'm going to play the title track right now.